Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thanks so much for tuning into the program today. I'm Neil Stavem, and Ted Ross at the controls, Joe Benderson at the phones today. Looking forward to a good hour as we talk today about the two hands. Well, there's going to be more than that.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes we can use a visual, and we're going to talk about both hands that God calls us to use in service of His kingdom.
That's right. And you want to know what the left hand is doing, right? You know, there's a verse about that.
That's true. Yeah, I'm not sure if we'll get to that or not, but we're gonna talk mission outreach. We're gonna talk Great Commission as well as Great Compassion. In fact, that is the title of a book from Paul Borthwick called Great Commission, Great Compassion: Following Jesus and Loving the World. And it's always appropriate to deal with these important principles. And to help us do that, Paul Borthwick is back with us. Paul has been a friend over the years and serves as Senior Consultant for Development Associates International. He teaches global Christianity at Gordon Conwell in Massachusetts and authored a number of books, including Western Christians and Global Missions and Six Dangerous Questions to Transform Your View of the World and A Mind for Missions and Simplify, one of his books not too many years ago, which is very helpful. And Paul travels a great deal and has a good sense of what God is doing around the world, and so we always appreciate the opportunity to connect with him. Paul, welcome back to the broadcast. Good to have you on.
Thanks, Neil. Looking forward to the conversation.
You know, we mentioned about the two hands on the cover of the book. By the way, we've got some copies to give away, so we'd love to get one in your hands and just ask you if you'd want to sign up for that. We'll do a drawing at the top of the hour, 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. It's a great book, wonderful stories, a great insight, something that would be really helpful to you in your personal walk and maybe in your small group as well. So on the cover of the book, A Great Commission, Great Compassion, there are two hands. You got the one pointed upward, the other kind of open and reaching down. And you also refer to Martin Luther talking about the two-handed God. Let's start there. What do you mean there?
Well, the two-handed God, as Martin Luther referred to it, was talking about the God of the Bible and the God of history. And his quotation was something along the lines of that most of us have just a one-handed God. We don't have a God that's active in world history from our vantage point. All we're doing is thinking about the Bible in preparation for heaven. And that translates into lifestyle, where sometimes Christians have been defined as being so heavenly minded, they're no earthly good. And the two hands on the cover of the book are, one is, you know, pointing people upward towards a relationship with Jesus Christ, but also reaching out practically so that we're not just preaching the good news of Jesus, we're living it in front of others and demonstrating it to others by the way we live.
And go and do, and word and deed seem like obviously they go together. And I'm just curious, and you've been, you know, studying and teaching and actively engaged in missions for many years. Is this, I mean, haven't mission endeavors, you know, been historically doing both word and deed? I mean, is this sort of a modern dichotomy, perhaps, that we've come to today?
Well, I think the dichotomy might have been a little over 100 years ago when the so-called social gospel rose up, which basically wasn't as definitive in terms of the saving work of Jesus as it was in the practical outworkings of Christian faith by caring for our fellow humanity, which is a good thing to be doing, but basically the both and sort of got lost. And in response to that, the pendulum swung the other way, and a group of people reacted to the social gospel to basically offer the fundamentals of faith, which actually became the reason why originally it was called fundamentalism, right? And then fundamentalism got softened by the people who ended up calling themselves evangelicals, And nowadays, of course, nobody knows what to call themselves because so many people identify either as fundamentalist, that's not a really good term anymore, and evangelical sometimes has some guilt by association going on with it. So, but bottom line is, and one of the points of the whole book, is to try to bring people back to the center where it's not an either-or proposition, but it's both-and. You know, it's not an either preach the gospel or demonstrate it. It's share Jesus Christ as you live out the Christian faith. And one of the issues historically has been not a matter of whether it's not both and, but it's a matter of prioritization. And as a result, sometimes, especially in the modern mission movement, the prioritization of preaching the gospel, planting churches, sort of overlooked the need for social change and social action in the community. And years ago, World Vision coined the phrase that empty bellies have no ears. And what they meant by that was, yes, we want to help people come to a personal faith in Jesus Christ, but we have to feed them first. And, you know, so it's a matter of making sure we stay on track with the, you know, rather than swinging to one side or the other side of the pendulum.
The title of the book is called Great Commission, Great Compassion. Paul Borthwick's my guest. We do have some copies of the book to give away, and you can sign up with a phone call at 877-93-FAITH. Paul, it's interesting that you gave an example in one of your classes, you know, teaching about the mission that, you know, so many students, and I think we'd all say, well, yeah, we know what the Great Commission is, but maybe we don't know what Great Compassion is. But you suggest there's more than one commissioning in the scriptures. So say a bit more about that.
Well, if you go through the Gospels and the Book of Acts, each one begins with, in the case of the Book of Acts, or ends with, in the case of the four Gospels, some commission to go. You know, the main one we know is Matthew 28:18-20. Go make disciples, you know, all authority is given to me, teaching them to observe everything or to obey everything I've commanded you, baptizing, etc. And that's typically been called the Great Commission. But in Mark's gospel, Jesus says it a different way, and he says, preach the gospel to all creation. In Luke's gospel, it says, you know, preaching repentance to all the nations beginning in Jerusalem. In John's gospel, all Jesus says is, as the Father has sent me, now I'm sending you. And in Acts 1:8, Jesus, some of his last words recorded, at least as Luke has it, is that Jesus said, you better receive power from the Holy Spirit, be my witnesses. And then he gives sort of a geographic outflow, Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, to the ends of the earth. The point that I try to make in the book is, this is not just, the Great Commission is not just one isolated statement, but rather something Jesus said over a 40-day period, where he was basically reiterating with his disciples, hey, if you don't remember anything else, remember this. And in the book, I actually talk about how many times in the Bible the last words of a departing leader are recorded. You know, Moses with Joshua, David to Solomon, etc. And that's because in the Hebrew tradition, your last words are like your last will and testament. And Jesus was saying, listen, as you remember me, make sure to go and tell others.
So that's the Great Commission, and we do well to study it in all of the Gospels and Acts. But Great Compassion, say a bit about that phrase, and people might not be familiar with that.
Well, Dr. Peter Kuzmich of Croatia and my former professor at Gordon Conwell Seminary, he's the one that actually coined the phrase, and I do give him credit in the book. But he's the one that said, you know, when Jesus says in Matthew 28, teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you, that includes, he says, what Jesus said in Matthew 25. And so he calls Matthew 25 the Great Compassion. And if you remember, that's the story of the judgment, the sheep and the goats. And in Matthew 25, Jesus is basically saying, you know, I was hungry and you fed me. I was naked, you clothed me. Thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, you welcomed me in. And basically, Dr. Kuzmich was saying that part of obeying everything Jesus has commanded us is living a life of compassion, especially compassion to those who are in some way or other in desperate need. And it's both and.
It's always been a challenge, I think, whenever we read Matthew 25 and say, well, what does that mean for us today? And we're going to address, you know, what does Matthew 25 look like today? And what does it mean to go? How do we live with a sent person mindset? Paul Borthwick addresses that in his book, Great Commission, Great Compassion, Following Jesus and Loving the World. And we'll get to that in the moments ahead. Paul Borthwick serves as senior consultant for Development Associates International, teaches global Christianity at Gordon College, in Massachusetts. He's a speaker and teacher, taught courses literally around the globe, and has written a number of books. We're honored to have him with us today on Connecting Faith. And we've got copies of Great Commission, Great Compassion to give away. Love for you to sign up for one. We'll do a drawing here at the top of the hour, 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. We'll talk about living as a sent person coming up. Go and do as Jesus commands it. The world needs it. Word and deed go together. One without the other is not enough. We follow Jesus into all the world. We follow his example in all that we do. And that's the premise of the conversation we're having today with Paul Borthwick. Paul's a teacher, a speaker, a pastor, a writer, and he's part of Development Associates International, which is, we'll have him just say a bit about that mission outreach as well. He's written several books, including Great Commission, Great Compassion. The subtitle is Following Jesus and Loving the World. And we're talking about how they go together. And before the break, Paul, we're talking about, you know, this understanding of the commission to go. You reference a term called the sent person. What does living with a sent person mindset look like?
Well, even in the scriptures themselves, especially in Matthew 28, when Jesus says, go and make disciples. Actually, the Greek language, as I've been told or taught by my teachers, it means actually as you are going, make disciples. In other words, it assumes that Christians are going into the world. And when I say living as a sent person, I'm basically trying to ask God to give me a mindset that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, I realize that I've been sent into the world. In John's Gospel, when Jesus appears to his disciples on Easter night, he says to them, as the Father has sent me, now I'm sending you. And so the way I like to say it is, none of us needs to ask if we are sent. If we're a follower of Jesus Christ, we are sent. It might be across the street. It might be across the cubicle in our offices. It might be upstairs, downstairs in our apartment houses, or it might be to the ends of the earth and working someplace in the Middle East. But the bottom line is we have to ask God where we are sent, but right now, every day, where I am is where I'm sent. So whether it's talking to the guy next to me on an airplane flight or it's being available to help a neighbor, I'm sent into the world. And it's basically a mindset that I think we need to try to cultivate. Because Jesus says it, you know, I'm sending you. You don't have to ask if.
You recall, I think back when you were in college, you and a group of guys decided that you wanted to know something about, you know, as much as you could about just understanding more about the countries of the world. And you know, that probably wouldn't be a bad project for all of us to take on, right? It needs to start with some awareness and understanding.
Absolutely, yeah. I think the phrase we came up with was, we wanted to know something about everywhere and everything about somewhere. And, you know, in my community here where I live near Boston, if a guy says to me that he's a Karen person from Myanmar, you know, if I go all blank on him, then the conversation kind of ends. But if I know that that's the country we used to call Burma And Karen is an unreached people group, or sorry, a minority people group in the northern part of Myanmar, then all of a sudden the conversation gets going a little bit faster. And I just encourage people, because we always need to remember the United States is 5% of the world's population. 95% of the world that God so loved, John 3:16, is outside of our borders. And that's one of the reasons why understanding that we're sent, you know, to my neighbor across the street, he's from India and his wife is from Sri Lanka. I might not get to those places as a missionary, but I can certainly go across the street.
And I know that, I mean, you're so good at modeling this. You start conversations, right? You ask people where they're from. You kind of do that all the time, don't you?
Yeah, and being from Boston, you might, you know, I not only ask people where they're from, but sometimes, you know, they'll talk to me on an airplane flight, and this could be just a regular person from similar culture to me, but in the Boston area, we're not, shall I say, not that Christian, you know, not that religious. And so people out, my new approach is on an airplane flight, when someone, I eventually have to self-identify, they'll ask, you know, what do I do and everything, and I'll actually say, well, actually, you should know that I'm an evangelical pastor, right? And oftentimes it gets a roll of the eyes, and then I'll say to them, now that I've told you that, what do you think I believe? Meaning, I know they heard the term, but I want to know what they associate with it so I can actually explain it. But it sort of puts them on the offensive, you know. Well, you know, and one guy says to me, he says, well, you're probably packing heat, meaning carrying a weapon. And I said to him, no, but I said, mine is in the overhead bin. I just teased him.
No.
But the idea behind it is, you know, being on mission is realizing that it's not some faraway place over there where most of us are sent. It's to the laundromat or the supermarket or the workplace or Wall Street, wherever God might send us. That's where we need to be on mission.
And the reality is that the world has come to our doorstep, as you said. I mean, you may not ever get to India or Sri Lanka, but, you know, your neighbors, they've come to your neighborhood, so you have an opportunity to make a connection there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know some of your listeners are in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, which has one of the highest concentrations of people from Somalia. There's almost no chance that anybody from Minneapolis-St. Paul could go to Somalia as a missionary. But the reality is God brought Somalia to all of them. And in all the Christians in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, God brought people to them that will hear the gospel through the Christians who are on mission in your own community.
Talking today with Paul Borthwick about his book, Great Commission, Great Compassion. You at the end of the book, and we're kind of jumping around, but at the end of the book, you say, you know, we could use our five senses as a framework for living out the Great Commission and Great Compassion. Just say a bit about what a witness looks like with the five senses, how that might help us.
Well, I basically go through different passages of Scripture. You know, faith comes by hearing, hearing by the word of Christ. So we preach, we speak, we share, we tell our own testimonies to the sense of sound. But we are the light of the world, Jesus says. So we're trying to bring light, the light of the gospel, the light of justice, righteousness, into dark places. He says we're the salt of the earth. So salt fundamentally, especially in the first century, was used to flavor or preserve food. So we're supposed to be people that are preserving goodness, preserving love in the world, as well as making other people's lives taste better, salt. The Bible also refers to the fact that in Matthew 25, you know, the way we touch people is as if we were touching Jesus. So I'm a stranger and you welcome me in. You know, I was naked and you clothed me. And then the last one comes out of 2 Corinthians 2, where Paul the Apostle says we are the fragrance of Christ, or the sweet aroma. And so even by our nonverbal behavior, we can actually leave sort of a scent, a fragrance of Jesus' grace by the way that we treat people, our patients in the Boston area. Even the way that I drive more politely might be part of the fragrance of being a Christian witness.
it does seem that probably, if we were honest, we've lost cultural influence and maybe, lost some of those aspects of being salt and, the fragrance of Christ. How do we begin to get that back? And I guess maybe just to, are we, in fact, is that how the world sees us, that we aren't being light or salt or the fragrance?
Well, I think it's a great question, because more than ever in my lifetime, and I'm now almost 64 years old, the us versus them mentality seems to be pervasive in our culture, And, I know families that won't talk to each other because one voted for this person and one voted for that person, right? And it's so divisive. And I think one of the ways we start is by being peacemakers, to use the Sermon on the Mount as an illustration. That we need to regain our foothold of people both who have convictions, but also who listen, maybe the two sides of the same argument, so that we can come out with the wisest possible responses. I would advocate, too, that people who find themselves to be, who already call themselves Christians, like you or me, that we make sure that all of our relationships aren't just fellow Christians who believe things exactly the same way as we do. Because if that's the case, then we're having no impact on the world that's not yet knowing God's love. To quote from a guy I use in the book, he says, "Jesus commanded us to be fishers of men, but we've become keepers of the aquarium." And what he means is, rather than being out in the world, out in the ocean of reality, trying to influence, we're now in our safe little bowls of our churches or our Christian communities or our fellowships, and we don't even go into the world where people don't live a Christian life, and we don't go to a place where we can be a positive influence for the gospel.
Yeah, I think we really have that kind of what come and get it mentality, don't we? I mean, which is wonderful, but that doesn't reach the people that aren't going to be coming to church.
Well, I actually ask people, is your church a come and see church or a go and tell church? And a come and see church means we're going to keep it inside our church building. If anybody comes in, they're bound to hear it. But a go-and-tell church says, no, we go to church on Sunday or Friday or Saturday, whatever day church services might be to you, and then we get strengthened to go back into the world, into the laboratories, into the community, into the supermarkets, like I said, to be influences for the gospel.
Paul Borthwick is my guest today, Senior Consultant for Development Associates International. He teaches global Christianity and missions and speaks actually around the globe, and has taught at places like Gordon College and Africa International University and Alliance Theological Seminary in Manila and Lanka Bible College in Sri Lanka, and guest faculty positions at Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary, and has written a number of books. The one we're referencing today is called Great Commission, Great Compassion, Following Jesus and Loving the World. We're talking about word and deed going together. We've got the copies of this great book to give away, and we'd love to put one in your hands. Get half a dozen or so, I think. 877-933-2484 is the number. 877-93-FAITH. Love to have you sign up for a copy. May have a question as well. If you want to join the conversation, you're welcome to do so with a phone call at 877-933-2484. We'll talk about some of the ways that we choose to, the way that we live, to start making a difference for advancing God's kingdom. We'll get to that and more coming up in the moments ahead here on Connecting Faith.
Give me your eyes for just one second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach. Give me your heart for the ones forgotten. Give me your eyes so I can see. Yeah.
Paul Borthwick's my guest today as we talk Great Commission, Great Compassion, Following Jesus and Loving the World. And Paul has taught on areas of global Christianity and mission for a number of years. And he's written books like Western Christians and Global Missions, How to Be a World-Class Christian, Six Dangerous Questions to Transform Your View of the World, A Mind for Missions, Simplify, one of his books came out a few years ago, and Great Commission, Great Compassion, the one we're referencing today. And Paul, when it comes to thinking with seeing with new eyes, and we do need to make some choices in how we live and act so that we can be living out God's kingdom purposes. Talk a bit more about just some of the choices and what would be a good strategy or start, I guess, for us to maybe start living in a different way.
Well, I think I want to emphasize that the starting point doesn't have to be gigantic. You can start small and build. You know, maybe before you meet your friend who's from, or meet your neighbor who's from India, or his wife's from Sri Lanka, you want to do some reading about, you make a choice to read so you can become informed about Buddhism or Hinduism. You know, before you talk to your doctor, Dr. Muhammad, about his faith, you know, learn something to ask about Islam. Go out of your way to meet people, get out of your own comfort zone, and go to places where people are being cared for. You know, it's basically a daily item of getting my eyes off myself. I think we all need to remember that in Rick Warren's best-selling book, Purpose Driven Life, the opening line is, it's not about you. And I think one of the choices that any follower of Jesus Christ can make, if we're going to be living out the Great Compassion, Great Commission lifestyle, is to make a choice to see beyond ourselves, you know, to basically put on our Jesus glasses, is one of the ways I say it, and start seeing the people around us through the eyes of Jesus and trying to respond to that person the way we think Jesus would.
And, you know, it certainly, I know you've written about it and talked about it, but that we live more simply so others can simply live. I mean, some of those choices in terms of the resources we have goes a long way as well.
Yeah, it's amazing to me that, you know, my inclination, and maybe other people's too, is when I think about economic affluence, let's say, economic wealth, or at least economic success, I'm always comparing myself upward. Mm. You know, I compare myself with the guy who's got the bigger house, the guy who's got the bigger car. Our pastor actually talked last Sunday about obsessive comparison disorder. You know, we're always comparing ourselves against somebody else, but we don't tend to compare ourselves against the people who are stuck on Syrian refugee camps. We don't say to ourselves, you know, like, well, I wish I could have the same situation as that person living in urban poverty. You know, we compare ourselves to the wealthier folks. And sometimes I think as Christians, we need to realize, no, wait a second. We need to think about the people who have less than us, and maybe to use that quote that you used from I think we got it from a bumper sticker, living more simply than others may simply live. You know, a small adjustment to my lifestyle, and I can support a child with Compassion Project or World Vision. And a little bit bigger adjustment in my lifestyle, I might be able to, you know, support someone who's doing some sort of outreach or compassionate ministry in Bangladesh. I mean, the reality is we have the choices, and as I point out in the book, one of the greatest challenges for Christians in the United States of America especially is, what will we do with all the choices that we have?
In fact, that probably distinguishes us from the rest of the world as much as anything, right? That the fact that we do have choices.
Well, yeah, as I point out in the book, the guy who lives in the urban slums of some gigantic Indian city and he has one outfit never stands at the closet and wonders what he's going to wear today. But we spend time on those choices. Most of the supermarkets I've been to in the, you know, Africa, Asia, Latin America don't have an entire aisle of nothing but bottled water. But we have those choices. And my point is, you know, we need to be realizing that the choices we have is itself an expression of how wealthy we are. And then what will we do with the choices when we really realize that? Because, you know, I can use my time one way or I can use it another. And any time you're going to get involved in especially compassionate ministry for people, it's usually not a short-term, you know, half an hour here, half an hour there. It might take a little bit longer time to help people break out of the cycle of poverty or, you know, do some remedial work in people's lives that have made some bad choices themselves, and as a result, they're suffering. So, you know, it's a hard thing to make the choices because in many respects we're going against our culture of comfort, and we're going against our culture of comparison.
And as you just talked about getting involved, I mean, that is another key step too, isn't it, that we enter into the challenges, the sufferings of others, that we don't just sit back, and it's not just about, you know, giving money, but it's about engaging.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, actually knowing people, going back to the same locations for churches that do short-term mission trips, I strongly advocate going back to the same location year in and year out, just so that those people realize that you didn't just come to look at their suffering, you came to build a relationship. And there's nothing that changes you quite as fast as actually knowing the people whose lives are much more challenging than ours.
I think one of the phrases that kind of caught my attention again as I was looking through the book is about trying to stay soft. That just feels like a good reminder, and I'm sure part of that is probably what just it's building relationships. That's one of the ways that we stay soft.
Yeah. And again, and staying soft, I think, goes back to also the starting small, because part of the reasons why people get hard or in resistance to compassion ministry is if you're so overwhelmed by the needs, it's paralytic. It paralyzes you. You know, and staying soft means, hey, for one family, I can do something. I can reach out. I can't reach the Muslim world, but I could talk to Abdul, who lives down the street. You know, I can't necessarily do everything I can for Bible translation, but I at least could start a Bible study at my workplace. You know, I mean, basically, don't get so overwhelmed by the unmet needs that you fail to meet the ones you can meet.
I'm sure that those that, you know, are engaged in various ministries can, I mean, despair can certainly can creep in, right, when you feel there's so much overwhelming need. How do you, I mean, you travel the globe, you're teaching and training, but you're interacting and you're seeing global poverty at a much different level than most of us will. So how do you keep the right framework and perspective?
That's a great question, because any of us who travel regularly into some of the more economically challenged parts of the world, you know, a couple of years ago, I was in the biggest slum, Kibera, in Nairobi, Kenya, and it is just overwhelming. And there are times that I just feel overwhelmed. I mean, there are times that I don't know what to do with myself. But most of the time, I just try to remember to be where I am, you know, to be present with the people that are there, and to listen to their stories, to maybe have some of my own stereotypes dispelled, but to try to stay soft. And whenever I go someplace, to try to bring at least one name, one person, one picture home in my heart, so that I can't take, you know, five or 600,000 people in the Kibera slums. I can't take them all home in my heart. But maybe because I talked to Pastor Isaiah, I can remember to pray for him when I get back home. And that will be sort of the way that I try to stay soft. But it is a challenge. Because partly when you see a lot of the things in the world, you get back here to the U.S. and you either forget about it and immediately neutralize yourself by doing, you know, going out and buying something, you know, just to sort of feel like you're not victim to poverty, or you just feel so lonely because the vast majority of the people that you're talking with don't have any idea of the world you just saw. And that's actually a challenge for any of us who go out regularly, is coming back home here and feeling, you know, lonely to the people in our own churches who maybe have never been outside of the United States or outside of their own suburban neighborhoods.
So do you pray maybe much more specifically, as you say, you bring that name or that person back in your heart? Are your prayers maybe more focused than they were before?
Yeah, I think so, because rather than just praying for China, you know, I can pray for Pastor so-and-so, who I met at a conference last year in Thailand. And, you know, so I've taken a country of 1.3 million people down to a country of three guys that I can pray for. And, yeah, I think it helps. I mean, it helps me just because it gets so vague and overwhelming when I'm just trying to pray for the whole big picture.
Yeah. A question from Debbie, and maybe kind of circle back to the premise of the book, Great Commission, Great Compassion. And She is from Minneapolis and wanted to know, you know, are Jesus' words in the Great Commission apply to Gentiles as well as to Jews? And are there additional words from Paul that would also confirm the Great Commission?
That's a great question, because one of the arguments of some is that Paul in his epistles didn't talk as much about missions, if you will, as Jesus did in these Great Commission statements. But I think the answer to the first question is that the Great Commission, I believe, is binding on anybody who claims to be a disciple of Jesus Christ, Jew or Gentile background. It doesn't matter. And you see this as it was carried out in the book of Acts, so that now you've got people who are, you know, half-breeds like Timothy maybe, or even Luke, who are starting to spread the gospel. And even in book of Romans, which is ultimately the greatest expression in Paul's epistles of the gospel itself, he concludes it by basically testifying of his own missionary heart, where he says, you know, in Romans 15:20, his aspiration was to preach the gospel where Christ was not already named. So even having accomplished the church planting in Rome, he was basically saying, there's so much world out there that hasn't yet been reached. That's where I want to go. And then, of course, you pull back from Revelation. If you look at Revelation 5, verse 9, and 7, verse 9, you realize that God's ultimate purpose is to bring us to the day when people from every tribe and tongue and language and nation are worshiping Jesus. And I think that needs to be fresh in our minds as the overall purpose of why we do what we do as Christian witnesses in the world.
You'll find this book to help keep that passion fresh in your minds and maybe stir up a new, deeper love to serve the Lord and follow Him. Following Jesus and Loving the World, the subtitle of the book, Great Commission, Great Compassion, written by Paul Borthwick, and we've got some copies available. You can sign up for a drawing. We'll do that at the top of the hour at 877-933-2484, or you can go to Amazon or University Press and get a copy of that. And Paul, we'll have you back here this spring. I know you got a new book coming out, Fellowship of Suffering? Is that?
Yeah, myself and another colleague wrote a book called Fellowship of the Suffering, and it's basically making sense of your own suffering and how it might equip you for ministry and mission in the world.
Look forward to a conversation about that coming up here down the road. Paul, always good to visit with you. Thanks for sharing with us today and the encouragement.
Thanks, Neil.
Paul Borthwick joining us today on Connecting Faith. We've got 15 minutes remaining, and we're going to talk church and culture with Leith Anderson coming up next.
I want to feel your hands.
Past the hour, I've been talking today about how do we follow Jesus and love the world, that use our hands and our feet and all that God gives us to show not only compassion to the world, but to share the gospel. And someone who's been helping us understand that through faith and culture for many years is Leith Anderson. Leith serves as president of the National Association of Evangelicals. He was a pastor at Wooddale Church in Eden Prairie, Minnesota for 35 years, has written some 20 books, and we always love the opportunity to get together to talk faith and culture. And Ted and I, Leith, always enjoy these Wednesday visits, so thanks for coming back on with us.
Hey, it's always great. You've always got good and tough questions for me.
All right, well, we'll throw a few tough ones at you as well. Paul Borthwick, who was just on with us, says hi, by the way, said, reminded us that proclamation and demonstration go together. And I was just curious, maybe as you pastored, if there were ways that you wanted to make sure that your church was maintaining a balance of both, or, you know, does it come through programs or preaching, or how does that happen that we make sure that we're both going and doing?
Paul Borthwick, wow, he's a good friend. Mm-hmm. He knows missions well. He's a marvelous author, and he got it right.
Yeah.
It's faith and works, according to James. You know, words are not enough, works are not enough. They got to be connected. So churches certainly should teach the truths of the Bible, but also give ideas, opportunities to act out the gospel. But let me share a reality that I think we don't often talk about, and that is that most Christians, we don't do everything we're taught to do, and pastors and churches tend to go for 100%. We're going to get everybody and then end up disappointed. And I think it may be a better approach to share opportunities, not so much just for everybody, but focus on the 10% of the Christians in the congregation who want to actually do something, evangelism, social action, compassion, and more. And as they become more effective and they show others how to proclaim and demonstrate, the 10% then start to permeate the congregation, and 10% can spread to 20% or 50%. But the advice is start with the committed and be willing to add some more later instead of trying to go for everybody up front.
Does it work the other way too? Maybe if you're one of those, you know, 10% or so that are really passionate about a particular, maybe a compassion kind of issue, a project, that you go to the church and say, look, not everybody's going to want to do this, but I'll take a leadership role and do it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, ideally, if you're that person, figure on saying, I'm not going to do all this myself, whether, you know, I'm invited to or not. I'm going to recruit some other people to tell the truth and do the truth.
Leith, I'm just wondering, as president of the National Association of Evangelicals, is this a challenge for the organization as well to represent, you know, both the proclamation and the demonstration aspects of the gospel?
Yeah, that's not an easy question to answer. 75 years ago, our founders decided that we would not do evangelism, but that we are a family of denominations and organizations, and they're the ones who do the evangelizing. So what we do is we connect these evangelical agencies. And to be sure, we proclaim the gospel, we seek to demonstrate the gospel, but most of all, we try to strengthen and help our members to do the work on the ground. And our members, includes radio networks and churches and colleges and seminaries and mission agencies and campus organizations and publishers and more. And the proclamation and the demonstration of all of them, I get to see this. It is amazing. It is a really good and effective story.
And I guess, you know, it's probably one of those stories that we don't spend enough time talking about, that there is a massive amount of impactful work and the ministry being done that probably falls under the radar.
Well, evangelicalism is so big that often you can't know what's happening in the other quadrant, and it's good news, a lot of good news. Mm.
Now, Leith, since we last visited, we've gone through another anniversary of Roe versus Wade, the abortion decision by the Supreme Court. I know that NAE has been speaking about these important core issues of life as well, but what's your sense of the progress that maybe is happening in the area of pro-life?
It's good progress. Well, there's a number of angles. Again, pro-life is not just anti-abortion. It's life that begins at conception, but it certainly doesn't end at birth. It's from conception to natural death. You know, I'm old enough to remember the Roe versus Wade decision, and have seen our country's attitudes shift and change over the years. Back in 1973, our culture was at the front end of the sexual revolution. New forms of contraception, like birth control pills, were popular. They were dominating public opinion. And as I see it, it was not a time when children were prioritized as they are today. And now we're seeing growing percentages of Americans who oppose abortion on demand and who are increasingly pro-life. We have a great culture in how to preserve the life of a premature baby, of servicing those who have special needs. In my reading of the Bible, this is a change in the right direction. So we're seeing not only the absolute numbers of people who are pro-life increasing, but the percentage of the population as well. It's good.
Yeah, very good. A lot of people turned out for the march, too, just a few days ago. It's very exciting. Another thing a lot of people will be turning out for very soon is the Olympics over in Korea, and that starts up on February 9th with the opening ceremonies. And I wondered, Leith, if this particularly is having the North Korea and South Korea kind of do a little reconciliation and want to march under the same flag. Is this partially a result of praying Christians in South Korea?
Well, it's a combination of praying Christians and political advantage, perhaps, for the North Koreans. I mean, it's a good step in the right direction. We shouldn't be shouting at each other. We should be talking to each other and trying to find some resolutions that are far short of coming out in war. But, you know, Christians are severely persecuted in North Korea, and what a contrast. South Korea has the largest church in the world, and South Korea is a major missionary-sending country. The difference between the North and South is just stunning. And I think our prayer should be, especially for the South Koreans and the Chinese, so many Chinese Christians, and the impact that they can have on North Korea to change government policies and to protect those who are believers. You know, Ted, I remember a news story about a Christian in North Korea who was sentenced to death. And before his execution, he wrote a letter to the government asking that he would be executed in such a way that his organs could be donated to save the lives of others. I think, wow, he was a martyr who loved Jesus and wanted to save those who were lost. And, you know, I pray that God may multiply those kinds of believers in North Korea under awful times of persecution.
You know, we think of, you know, speaking of persecution, somehow we think, well, it so, and much of it does happen in maybe Islamic-based countries, but North Korea has been just this really unusual situation where, as you say, the believers have suffered greatly there, and we probably don't know even, you know, a third of the stories.
And that's part of the problem, how much we don't know. But, you know, God has faced challenges like this throughout all of history. And the Church of Jesus Christ has been persecuted and oppressed, and there have been martyrs for 2,000 years. And the gospel of Jesus Christ has pierced through the greatest of barriers. And that's what we need to pray for in our generation, there and other places as well.
Well, we've got a couple minutes left. The NAE does their leadership summary or their survey, leader survey, each month. And this past month, more than half of the evangelical leaders say they take a Sabbath from electronic communication devices. And then many of the 43% that do not take a break from their devices wish they did. Say a little bit more about this latest survey.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I was kind of surprised how many evangelical leaders actually shut off their smartphones and their computers for a weekly digital Sabbath. So good for them. And the ones that don't, they feel guilty about it. they say that they think they should. So, you know, it's the Sabbath principle. You trust God and get everything done in 6 days. A few years ago, I was preaching to a congregation of young adults, and I suggested they give up Facebook for Lent. There was an immediate guttural, passionate groan of everybody. So I don't actually think they did it. you know, but it's a great principle here that, you know, why don't we focus on God and maybe just cut something else out, whether it's Lent coming up or whether it is every Sabbath day, just focus on the Lord and cut out the digital stuff.
As I was looking at that survey, it reminded me of that. Well, probably we as church members could do a little better protecting our pastor's time and giving them some margin too, right?
Yeah, you know, I know that sometimes that's a problem. My experience is that people really were pretty respectful and fair. As a pastor, I never had an unlisted number. I never told people they couldn't call me at home. And in all the years, yeah, there were a few times when there were calls on my birthday or calls in the middle of the night, but I think people were always appropriate. I don't know. As a pastor who loves people, then I don't want to be cut off from them. So I guess I would have a limited Sabbath. I want to be reachable.
Good. Well, Leith, we're grateful that you are reachable here every other Wednesday to give us some good insight. As always, we talk faith, culture, and the church. Leith Anderson, president of the National Association of Evangelicals. You can go to NAE.net to find out about all the great things they've got going on. And Leith, blessings to you. Always good to talk with you. Thanks for checking in today.
Okay. Blessings on you guys.
Thanks, Leith.
All right. Thanks for listening in today's Connecting Faith. If you missed part of the show today and you want to just hear it again, you can find the interviews. We post them online at the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. And you can hear Paul Borthwick's conversation and also our visit with Leith. Tomorrow, we're going to visit with our very own Susie Larson and talk about your powerful prayers. It's going to be a great conversation. You won't want to miss it. Join us for a great conversation tomorrow on Connecting Faith. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. And you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.